sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It is a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just
day.
A sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse on this cold January morning. It's been a beautiful morning, though, after the snowfall, and it's nice to see our air clear as well. We'll be taking your calls. The number to call, 801-575-8255, and the phone lines are open. You can also text us at 57500. Wanted to start out the 10 o'clock hour with a feature talking about how to take care of those poinsettias that we all have sitting around our homes right now after the holidays. And they're still pretty beautiful, but they're not going to stay that way without proper care. So tell us how to take care of them.
They're actually quite easy to take care of as a houseplant as long as you have them in a fairly bright location. So an east or west window or off to the side of a west or south window. Turn them once a week and just treat them like a houseplant. The trick to keeping them compact and not leggy is sometime in March, cutting them back.
This is so hard for me to do.
Yes, because
they
so
look so
beautiful.
Ugly.
And so you cut them back to the stems and then let them regrow through the summer.
So all the foliage off.
All the foliage
just
comes
leaving
off.
The stems.
And you can cut, depending on the size, you can cut it down to the stems about 6 inches tall.
Okay.
You know, if you've had it a long time, you leave it a little bit, you know, more branching on it. But cut the foliage off and then just let it continue to do its thing. So you've got this naked plant and you fertilize it through the summer with just a good houseplant fertilizer and let it regrow. And that will keep it more compact. But if you want it to color up, that's the tricky part.
But if you're into experiments, it's fun.
It can be. So you need to have it in darkness from about 5 p.m. to at least 8 a.m. the next morning. And you need to do this for 10 to 12 weeks. Hmm. And so you need to...
It's like taking the pet out, though.
It is. It is. You've got a little puppy.
Right.
For the next 12 weeks. And so the plant will need to be watered, but you don't want to go into wherever you're storing it and flip the lights on because that will reset the clock and you have to start the process all over. And so a lot of times people will put the poinsettia out at 8 o'clock in the morning and then put it in a closet in the evening so that there's no light hitting it. And then they bring it out the next morning. So they're moving the plant back and forth, which if you're not careful, you can damage the foliage. But that's one way you can do it. Another one is to maybe get a basement room that has a good window in it and just use, you know, it gets dark at 5:15 and it's not really light until around 7:30 or 8. And so you can put it in a room, but you cannot go into that room and flip the lights on.
Tricky.
It is.
So one year, somebody, a dear friend, had given me a poinsettia tree. It was very large, and I did keep it for years. Now, did it rebloom? No, but it was a beautiful plant, just green.
Yes, and they can be very beautiful, and we don't realize sometimes that in the wild state, in its wild state, poinsettias get 12 feet tall. And they look more like a bush or a tall, really tall perennial. And in the wild, their leaves turn red in the fall. And so when you see these at people's homes, you know, they're native to Guatemala and Mexico and things that during the winter, they naturally do this. And then they're often either allowed to regrow or they cut them to the ground as a perennial and let them resprout. Mm-hmm. But they can get that tall in the wild.
So if somebody was really going to take this on, would they want to repot their poinsettia?
Yes, at least every other year you want to repot it. But if you do this and keep it going for a few years, the stems will get thick enough that you can actually handle it gently by the stems to get it into a new pot. Right now, you just turn the pot upside down with your hand on the root ball so that it's, the root ball is resting in your hand, pull the pot off and put it into a new pot. But if it's a brand new poinsettia, you wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do it
until
at least
next year.
Okay. But when they do that, the soil has to be not too dry. I mean, it's kind of tricky to turn it over like that.
When the soil's on the drier side, but not bone dry, it sticks together a lot better. And it's much easier to do if you transplant before. So when they need to be watered again is the time you transplant, because the soil is more likely to hold together. It's lighter. You can get it into a new pot and then water it.
What is the bloom time? Like, it seems like poinsettias stay beautiful for quite some time, a couple months at least.
Well, the flowers, the true flowers, are the little yellow flowers on top of the red leaves, which are called bracts.
Oh, okay.
And so, but to make those leaves turn red and form the little yellow flowers, they have to go through this dark period, and it takes 10 to 12 weeks. But that whole thing for those little flowers is the process of this darkness to get it to form the flower buds. The bracts form, and I believe that insects, because that many insects can see into the infrared spectrum that we cannot, they actually, the bracts form a target pattern for pollinating insects to come in and find the flowers.
Oh, but those bracts stay red or whatever color for quite some
time. Until you cut the poinsettia back, and then it'll shoot new green leaves, and these bracts are modified leaves.
Bracts or
B-R-A-C-T-S.
B-R-A-C-T-S,
yeah,
which
bracts.
Is why
I
couldn't tell if it was bracts or brats. Okay, all right.
But yeah, and so the red leaves or the bracts that target the insects into the flowers are the what we're really going for, but they are formed because of that dark period.
Okay, and again, if we're going to cut it back, we're going to take on the challenge. We're going to do that when?
Cut it back in March.
March, okay. So
and
enjoy
maybe
it for
April,
the next couple of months.
Yeah, garden centers get their cuttings in usually sometime in July through August to grow them up to get them big enough to be in a sellable form. But because the greenhouses just rely on our natural lighting, they don't need to go through this trauma of putting the poinsettia into a closet or a deep, dank room on its own.
And
you know,
not forgetting it.
Correct.
Because it won't go without water for a longer period of time.
It will not.
All right.
And it won't go without sunlight for a long period of time.
Oh, that too. Okay.
So you do need to take that into consideration.
Okay. And you can find a complete article on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page that tells you how to do this and how to take care of your poinsettia. Number to call with your questions. Phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open, and you can text us your questions at 57500. Our next texter, Ton, says they would like to know where they can find information about the Southern Utah County Master Gardener class. We did talk about that a few weeks back, and they'd like to know where to get that information.
So if you live in Pace and Santa Quinn, Nephi, or thereabouts, we are offering our first Master Gardener course that will rotate from Nephi to Santa Quinn on a weekly basis. So there'll be one in Santa Quinn, one in Nephi every week during the day. And you can call the Juab County Extension Office. I don't have their number right off the top of my head, but if you just do an internet search of USU Extension Nephi or USU Extension Juab, the number will come up and you can register with the Juab County office.
Okay. Are you ready to do a little bit of marriage counseling?
Sure.
Okay. Next listener says that her husband puts all of their grass clippings in an open compost bin, and he doesn't believe her when she tells him that this isn't the right way to do compost. All it is grass clippings, nothing else. And she says, how does she explain to him that this isn't the right way?
USU has several fact sheets on composting. And the take-home message is this: if you're using grass clippings, especially fresh ones, you want to put what's called brown matter in, which would be something like sawdust. to help balance it out, because you run the risk of just, if you compost just grass, it forms sludge as it breaks down. But if you're putting the grass clippings on your soil, that doesn't happen, just because any sludge that might be formed is absorbed by the soil very quickly. And so you're supposed to have a one-to-one mix of brown and green matter. So it'd be fresh as compared to something that's dry and brown and dried out. And so she is more correct, and it would be good that if they have especially things available like small branches, brown leaves, things of that nature, to mix them in. If the grass is put in there, it eventually will form something kind of composty, but it runs a risk of just being really kind of sludgy and not super usable.
Yeah. Okay. Next listener, I'm just going to move on. Next listener wants to know, do crushed eggshells really help tomatoes grow and produce?
No, not in Utah. In other areas of the country, maybe. Our soils are very alkaline, and calcium is something that's very difficult for plants to absorb, especially in our alkaline soils. Mm-hmm. But those eggshells are calcium carbonate, which is lime. And our soils are already one-third lime or 25% lime by volume. And adding more lime to a lime-rich soil isn't going to increase calcium uptake. Mm. They don't break down really well, and so it's something that if you want to maximize calcium absorption by your plants, especially your vegetables, you water correctly, let the soil dry out moderately between irrigations, have lots of organic matter, compost mixed into the soil, and that's going to be the best thing for the plants. What inhibits calcium uptake are huge swings in irrigation, to where you have a lot of water and then you almost wilt your plants down before you irrigate again, and temperature swings. Plants don't absorb calcium very well when the soil is too cool or we have really cool weather.
All right. I'm a little confused by this next question, because the person is asking if they should unbury their peach from the snow.
If they're just shaking the branches off to prevent them from breaking, that's fine. Do that. The other risk they run into, if they live in an area that is rural, that has lots of mice, lots of voles, lots of like jackrabbits, then they may want to pull the snow away from the tree trunks, because the voles and mice will go underneath the snow and eat the bark off the trunk.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
I've seen it several times. Up in Cache Valley, my little brother had a home in Minden for a few years, planted $1,000, $1,200 in trees, and every one of them was killed because they had about 3 feet of snow, and the voles went crazy and ate the conductive tissue underneath the bark under the snow from the trees and killed every one of them. There was an orchard that had heavy snowfall. The same thing happened and it wiped out the entire orchard. So it's a real thing. If you live in areas with a lot of snow, if it's a year, because the vole numbers are cyclical, but voles will absolutely kill trees, but jackrabbits can, mice can too.
So how deep would the snow have to be for that to be an issue?
If it's up against the trunk, 6 inches would do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not a lot. And so if you have that problem, you want to use a metal mesh screen. And if you can, you bury it about 6 inches into the soil and wrap the trunk 3 or 4 feet up to keep those trees from being fed on.
Next listener is looking for a beech tree, just a regular beech.
Maybe the Arbor Day Foundation, if they're looking for the European beech, is the more common one. Maybe the Arbor Day Foundation, regular nurseries will have green-leafed beech trees. They may be named cultivars, but you can buy green-leafed beech that will get 50 feet high and wide. They're very slow growing, but you can find them.
He says that his neighbor is concerned about how the leaves don't fall until spring. Is that something that happens with the beech? And is that a concern?
Yes, it can be. The beech are related to the oaks, and many of those in that family, the species, do not drop their leaves until spring.
Okay.
And so under snow load, they can split out sometimes. I know that some companies like Monrovia have been focusing on cultivars that are sold in northern climates that have the leaves drop in the fall. Mm-hmm. But the beech trees can hold leaves quite late into the winter.
Okay, we've intrigued people with our composting discussion. Uh-oh. About, no, this is good, but they would like to know, the next listener would like to know, tell them again how deep to dig that trench for compost in their garden.
At least 6 inches deep and 6 inches wide, but maybe a foot is a little better, depending on how well you can dig your soil and how much stuff you're putting in. I mean, if it's only like the leftover vegetables and potato peels, 6 inches is great. And you only put it in there a couple inches deep and just work your way down the trench and just pull the soil back over.
Okay. Just make sure it's not more than a couple inches deep.
Yeah. A trench deep enough to accommodate what you're putting into it.
Okay. Next listener would like to know, what should they treat their plum and peach trees with? They have some kind of borer.
It could be several kinds of borers, and I need more information. Download the fact sheets on fruit trees from USU, especially peaches, because that will list most of the borers that can get in. Greater peach tree borer, you spray once every 3 weeks with permethrin the trunk and the base of the tree thoroughly from June through September.
Okay, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Phone lines are open. Give us a call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you for this last half hour of the KSL Greenhouse Show. Number to call, and the phone lines are open. This is a great time to call, 801-575-8255, or you can text us your questions at 57500. One of our last texters, Ton, had asked you about borers in their peach trees, and I know this is a question that just makes your head want to explode, because you need more information. There's more than one kind of borer.
There are, and so it's really important if you were growing fruit trees and you want to do it well, to download the fact sheets to learn what pests to scout for, what diseases to scout for, how to prune, and learn about the trees. I mean, if you were going to buy a new dog and buy a puppy, and you, especially if you're paying $500 or $1,000 for just a little pup, you are going to learn everything you can about how to take care of it because of the expense. And even though the fruit trees don't cost that much, they are a long-term investment that require similar kinds of care, in that there's regular care, and it's no different than having a swimming pool, a hot tub, a puppy. Now, the maintenance is obviously different, but the commitment is there. And so when people text and say, I have a borer in my peach tree, you know, 80% of the time it is going to be greater peach tree borer. And we can talk about that, but it could be peach twig borer. It could also be shot hole borer. It could be one of a couple species of flat headed borer, plus a few others that are less common. And so the reason I get hesitant is because the treatments for everyone is different. And there isn't a blanket spray that will keep all of them out. And there isn't a blanket systemic that will keep all of them out. We like to think so. But besides good tree care, to where that tree is being deep watered every 7 to 10 days, you've done correct pruning, you're doing your dormant sprays and things like that, you could organically manage pests using organic sprays and do it very well. It's just that there's regular maintenance. And so on these borers, almost all of them, with maybe the exception of greater peach tree borer, are there because the tree is stressed. And so the best way to keep your tree borer free is to take care of it. And so that involves, and I've already mentioned, the correct irrigation and correct pruning, but painting the trunk with water-based latex paint in the fall, to keep the sun from damaging the trunk is one of the major things we can do. Because when that tree is damaged, it puts off certain chemical scents that the insects can detect that the tree is stressed. If the tree is continuously drought stressed, the same thing can happen. So it is important to know what kind of damage you're seeing, where is it, where it is at, the time of year, to be able to determine the kind of borer in your tree. And so I get really hesitant because I could tell you the complete wrong treatment for something that is a borer, but if it is flat-headed borer, completely different treatment regime than something you would use for greater peach tree borer, which is very different than peach twig borer, which is different than shot hole borer.
Do all of these borers look different as
they
well?
They do. Most of them are beetles, but they look different and they have different life cycles. Shot hole borer only gets into stressed trees, and it looks like somebody took a little finishing nail or a brad nail and put little holes all over the tree.
Oh.
They're about a 16th of an inch wide. And so you can, and but they, again, mainly attract stressed trees. The greater, or excuse me, we talked about greater peach tree borer, but the flat headed borers get into new trees and attack the graft union for some reason. And so if a tree fails in the first couple of years and snaps at the graft union, there's a chance that you had flat headed borer in there. As a tree grows bigger, it becomes more resistant and able to cope with it. And so you really need to become familiar with maintaining your trees. The first couple of years are always interesting because you have to learn, not a lot, but just there's things to learn about it. But once you get into a routine and become more knowledgeable about things, managing those trees becomes a lot easier.
Okay, so you mentioned the fact sheets. Download the fact sheets, but how is it easiest for them to find the fact sheets? What should they do?
The internet, Google, or whatever search engine you prefer.
USU.
USU Extension.
And then Peach.
And Peaches in the Garden. Peaches okay. in the Orchard. Just USU and Peaches. Or you can do an internet search of USU and flat-headed borer, or USU and shot hole borer, USU greater peach tree borer. And it'll bring up the information on all of these. And the reason I bring this up, like flat-headed borer, they've been found in 40 or 50 different species of plants.
Oh.
And they just are generalist pests that attack anything that's stressed. And so a lot of our borers do that, but you need to start observing the differences to know how to treat.
Are we seeing more and more of these pests?
Drought usually makes the pests more prevalent because the trees aren't getting enough water, and the increased heat, even if they are getting enough water, sometimes they can't move the water from the soil up into their system fast enough. And that will also cause water stress, even though there's enough water in the soil. And so increased temperatures has made the prevalence of some of these pests more common. And so you do see more pests, and that just goes to better tree care. You can still manage them. The warm winters makes it so that sometimes the pests aren't killed over the winter because the ground didn't freeze very deeply, or if we never dropped below zero, a lot of the pests overwintering above ground weren't killed either.
So I think it's important to talk about, we've been talking a lot about water conservation over the past few years. Not so much this past year because we had plenty of water, I guess. But it's important to talk about, when we talk about conserving water, we're talking about maybe not watering your lawn, but that doesn't mean don't water your trees.
That is correct. When we are under water restrictions, for the most part, we are encouraged to keep our trees watered. And what will happen is that the trees, even though we're watering them, the net benefit is water savings because they're shading your lawn and the lawn requires less water, and we're using less water to generate electricity because you get natural cooling if the trees are placed correctly in the yard because they're shading buildings. And so A shade tree, depending on the research you look at, will use 20 to 30% less water over the same footprint as an area of lawn. Mm-hmm. And so we are encouraged to keep our trees healthy. And it's been a message that the conservancy districts have been trying to get out there. And one of the biggest challenges we run into is when people install a water-wise yard, they just quit watering. And they might have drippers here and there for their plants, but your trees need to be deep watered every 10 days or so to a depth of at least 18 inches.
Well, you talked about the cooling of the environment, but it's also a food source when you're talking about fruit trees.
You really are. And it can not be an expensive food source, but you invest money into the trees, invest money into spraying them. And again, you can do that organically just fine. Organics do It does involve spraying, but you can do it organically if you want, but there is an investment in this. And so it just is something that you should do to learn about your trees and how to properly manage them.
Mm-hmm. And trees in comparison to lawn, I mean, lawn takes so much more water than our trees.
It does. And the lawn twice a week to a depth of 6 inches to a foot. So 20 to 30% more water than a shade tree would use that's watered well. And I'm not discouraging lawn use, and the conservancy districts aren't even discouraging lawn use. It's just that you're installing lawn where you're going to use it. You know, where are the kids going to be playing? Where are you going to be having garden parties? You know, and so you need to look at these sorts of things. And what you don't want to do is, oh, that's an empty space, I'll just put lawn there. There are other options that actually save you money, save you maintenance and time than the lawn, and that are going to just be a lot lower maintenance and still look very, very pretty.
All right. And the main takeaway is, when you are installing more water-wise landscape, don't forget that your trees still have to have that amount of water that they need.
They really do.
All right. We're going to take a break. Come back with your calls and questions. Phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse, spending your Saturday morning with us. We appreciate it. Phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We were just noticing all the traffic in downtown Salt Lake City, and Ton was keen to notice that the monster truck show is happening this morning.
Yes, our parking is filling up across the street, and monster truck shows, it's totally off topic, but they're fun. You definitely need earplugs, but they are so fun.
They are fun to watch. Yes. I do not have the tickets, Dave Meekum. Just stop being here. Dave is speaking in our ears, totally distracting us from what we should be talking about. Okay, so back to the topic. Our listener wants to go back to the topic of the peach tree borer. They say, what is your favorite spray for the peach tree borer that's just below the soil level that you can generally spray the 1st of July and August?
It's not a matter of favorite. It's just a matter of what's available. And for homeowners, you have two options. Okay. Permethrin, which would be the high yield, I think they keep changing the name, Pet Garden and Livestock, or Pet Garden and Farm is the name of it.
Really?
Yep, 10% permethrin. Or if you can find it, 7%, but it has to be Carbaryl, which is off the market pretty much. The other one is usually organic, and it is, it can be in a few different formulations. Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew is one. There's some fruit tree sprays in it with spinosad, but that one has to be sprayed weekly. Permethrin's every 3 weeks, but those are the two available to homeowners.
Okay. Last year you did an experiment with, I want to call them dwarf tomatoes. And I'm wondering what your experiment is going to be this year.
I haven't decided. I grew way too much stuff last year, and so I've been
But I
hesitant.
Loved it because I was the beneficiary
yes.
of it.
So I've thought about playing with some of the tomatoes a little bit more to see if I can refine down a little bit. But I've also, all my favorite tomatoes I've been growing were discontinued by Johnny's. And so I need to find new varieties. But I haven't figured it out yet, but I will within the next few weeks.
Okay, so I want to know what the outcome of your experiment was. Did you find one of those dwarf type that you was better than the rest?
No, I didn't find one that was better than the rest. I did find that after they had produced a lot of tomatoes over a 6 or 8 week period, that the production really slowed down.
Yes.
They were determinant, which kind of for being cherry tomatoes was counterintuitive to me, because most cherry tomatoes are indeterminate and just produce, produce, produce. But these turned out to be determinant. And so your yields dropped by 70 or 80% over that initial flush of tomatoes. And so I think that if I had to redo it, I probably would have started some, you know, in late March to have them ready for spring, but started another crop of them a month later to extend that season out a bit.
Okay, here's what I learned. The ones that I kept in smaller pots didn't do as well, and they were slower producing and then didn't produce as long. The ones that I moved, the one that I moved into a larger pot, much larger pot, did great and produced all summer long. So if you wanted to move those smaller ones into the yard, but the whole point was to keep them in a container.
It was.
But they did do a lot better just
planted. And there's an old adage in the horticulture industry that if you're growing potted plants, find one that looks big enough and then double the size.
Right. Dave is on the line in Bountiful. Good morning, Dave. What was your question this morning?
Hey, good morning. I've got a foyer at my work that's not heated, nor is it chilled. And I've moved some household plants into it, and they seem to be thriving. But what other varieties of plants can I put in there that will take that swing of temperature?
Yes, cast iron plant is one. They're a little more expensive up front, not incredibly, but cast iron plant will tolerate it just fine. Another one called mother-in-law's tongue or snake plant will also do quite well in those situations.
Okay, those are both easy. I thought you were joking on the cast iron. To be
no,
okay.
Not at all. Okay. No, it's actually quite a pretty plant, but both of these actually, especially the cast iron plant, are grown outdoors in the mid to lower south, and they will tolerate cooler temperatures just fine.
And do they have any color to them?
They're not flowering, but they have leaf textures. And cast iron plant is just a beautiful green leaf. And then the snake plant has usually variegations of yellow, white, and green in the foliage. And the snake... Go ahead.
I have potted cherry tomato plant. I drug it in and put it in that foyer, and it's still producing tomatoes.
Yeah.
But I can tell that it's not happy.
Well, the light levels drop might be a lot of it. And if you can get it into February with light levels increasing, it may start to produce more. But after about a year, no matter what, tomatoes become fairly unproductive.
Is there any kind of fertilizer right now to help them with that?
No, it's light. And maybe if it gets below 50 at night, that could be impacting it also. And so you just need to nurse it through until it starts getting more sunlight in February.
Or get some lights.
Yes.
It's not that I need them. It's just the challenge of keeping them alive.
Right.
Is my thing.
Yeah. You know, another plant that you could put in there are perennial, or not perennial, but geraniums, the pelargonium geraniums. Those are overwintered in such situations. They tolerate cooler temperatures just fine.
And they're beautiful and flowering, too.
They are.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning. I was noticing my geraniums that I have in the garage, even though these temperatures have gotten so cold, they're in that window in my garage. They're doing great. They're all blooming. They look like it's spring outside. I did keep one of the tomatoes that you gave me to see how it would do over the winter. And it's kind of like what he said. It's looking kind of iffy. Mm.
Yeah, 50 at night, 70 during the day. If it is below that, they will struggle.
I think I'm keeping it alive just because it has a couple of tomatoes that are green on there, and I want to see how it does.
It'll probably start to snap out of it in February and March when we warm up, if you can keep it.
All right. Well, we are almost out of time. I just want to remind folks, if you want to go back and listen to the KSL Greenhouse podcast, you can find the full show in podcast form at kslpodcast.com. And our features for this week were 8 o'clock. We talked about pothos. That was our plant of the week. In the 9 o'clock hour, savvy shopping with gardening catalogs, things to watch out for that kind of get you that aren't really great. And then in the 10 o'clock hour, we talked about poinsettia care after the holiday bloom season. And check out all of our socials, too. We have articles on each of those things on the KSL Facebook page. Have a great day, Tom.
You have a great week.